will reconvene. And we had on our agenda to take time at 11 a.m. for the education bill. And Senator Olson is with us this morning to present the tax portions of the bill. There are some adjustments that need to be made here in this committee in light of the tax impacts. And so she is here to present for us the very limited purpose to address the tax provisions in the and impacts in the education bill. Senator Olson, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you have a copy of the tax?
Yes, tax spreadsheet.
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to be before your committee to present the tax portions of the education bill. Fortunately, there isn't a great deal of impact on taxes.
The tax levy sheet? Yep, that's what they have in their packet.
Oh, okay. Mr. Nauman is here who will track, give you more detail of it, but I will just explain to you what has brought about some changes in the levy impact of this bill. Obviously, there's not a lot of extra money to go around and to spend, but we have chosen to do some repurposing of existing revenue and both to enable adding some money to the formula, $50 each year, as well as to provide some incentives for getting some of the results that we are committed to. We have taken some strong policy stands of working to close the achievement gap and to improve the proficiency in reading by third grade. And the way in which we have done that is on the ladder is that we have phased out the integration revenue, which was highly criticized by our legislative auditor in terms of not having clear directions and basis for that revenue stream. And so there's been work and recommendations, there has not been any significant change in this. And so what we have done is left it in place for the first year of the biennium, but in the second year, we have moved it to transition to a literacy incentive aid, which will be distributed based on both the growth toward reading proficiency by third grade and the actual level of achievement of that reading proficiency. And we've done that on a three-year kind of sliding scale to soften the cushion of different classes. But in that movement, we have removed the levy for the integration aid. That was a combination of aid and levy. We've used part of that levy for some of the fund transfers that have been requested that affected the debt service funds. We approved a number of them, but only to move to the capital, operating capital, which is for the same kind of infrastructure functions within the district. And the other significant part is that we increased the levy amount for career and technical education. There has been a diminishment in the offerings and availability of this area throughout the state, and there's been some growing concern that this is an important part of the educational program, because if we acknowledge that young people learn differently, and many of them learn better, even the academics, if they can learn them in an applied way. And so we think that is a factor in contributing to the growing dropout rate rather than improving the dropout rate. And so we wanted to take at least a small step to helping some of the school districts be able to continue those programs that have been effective in their districts. So that is that's the general sense of where the levy changes or the tax changes are. We did not use all of it, so there is significant number, and I'm not going to quote the numbers. Because they seem to be moving every time we'd have to. Some other action takes place. You know, the interactions are critical between tax decisions and other decisions for the education bill as well. So I'm going to ask Eric if he would just walk through the spreadsheet that you have. I think in your table or in your folders, and describe this in a little bit more detail before you make the decision.
Mr. Nauman, welcome to the committee. And you're looking at a document dated 3/24/2011, 8:30 p.m. Is that the correct document?
Madam Chair, members, yes.
Thank you, members. You all have this spreadsheet.
Yes, so Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Eric Nauman with the Office of Senate Counsel Research and Fiscal Analysis, and I think it's probably easiest, members, there's a whole bunch of numbers on this page. This is the traditional spreadsheet that we bring to this committee. It represents its jurisdiction over the K-12 bill, but I think what I'd like to work off of is the column almost smack in the middle of the page titled Different Senate Minus Current Law Pay 2012. And for members' recollection, taxes payable 2012 is really fiscal 13. So that's the fiscal year that we're looking at. And going down the titles of each line item, I'm going to be highlighting the ones that are italicized as those represent policy change. So on line 8, Madam Chair and members, the first change is a slight adjustment to the equity levy portion inside the general education program. When the formula allowance was increased, there's some slight interactions associated with that aspect of the general education program, and there's a savings of roughly $10,000. Similarly, members on line 24, the operating referendum ratchets up slightly for certain districts when the formula allowance is increased, and there's an additional cost there of $190,000 on the levy side. And Madam Chair and members, on line 34 is the savings associated with the integration revenue program that Senator Olson mentioned previously. That's $28.2 million of levy reduction. Some of that savings was respent in the career and technical levy program. That's line 48. There's $8.5 million of increased levy on that line item. And then, Madam Chair and members, I'm going to highlight lines 54, 55, 57, and 64 as a group because they relate to a single initiative. The Wayzata School District is just on the bubble of being eligible for the Alternative Facilities Program, which allows school districts of substantial size to have some additional levy authority. And what the school district has done is come to the K-12 committee and said, we'd like to be entered in a couple, maybe 3 years earlier than the normal growth would bring them into the program. And in so doing, we would like to reduce some levies for the benefit of achieving the additional entrance into the program. So that creates savings on lines 54 and 55. A spend on line 57, and then some additional savings on line 64. So on net, there is no change, but there is some interaction on a collection of line items. And I can go into more detail. That's probably more than you want already. Then I will mention on line 63, the TIES Education Consortium has had existing levy authority for a lease purchase of their primary facility, and they have completed that, and they're now asking for the same amount of levy authority to extend it for some upgrades for some buildings because that number is not built into the forecast. There's a $632,000 levy effect associated with that provision. And then, Madam Chair and members, when the formula allowance was increased, it was increased beginning in fiscal year 2012. I mentioned on some earlier line items that, in fact, that created some interactions with some portions of the education program. So we carry those as adjustments in fiscal 13, and that you see on line 74, 70, and 76, as well as 78. All of those are changes that occur in other parts of the K-12 bill that really are attributable to fiscal 12, but because the levies are certified and completed through their process, we have to carry them as adjustments in fiscal 13. So, Madam Chair and members, that concludes page 2. The bill carries the salary freeze provision that the Senate voted on earlier in the session, and there's some slight levy assumption savings in the school age care extended day program on line 104. Lines 125 through the next page are the fund transfers for the districts indicated. And because those dollars get repurposed, we have to carry a cost because otherwise they would credit back to the taxpayers as a savings. So those are listed on those line items for those districts. And so, Madam Chair, then we can skip, I believe, to the very last page and talk about the bottom line. So I'd encourage you to look at line 198. These are the total certified levies post-credits for the Senate File 1030. Levies are reduced $17.152 million. And the structural levies, because there's the one-time fund transfers, is a little over $19 million going out into the tails. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the numbers on the levy tracking, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Question, Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, usually we see a run about how your bill affects each of our school districts. Do you have that available, and can it be distributed?
I do believe it is, Madam Chair and Senator Rest. I didn't know that it hadn't been distributed, but if it can be,
I would certainly like to.
We'll have that distributed
like
now,
to
Senator
see
Rest.
It. I mean, it's one thing to see how something affects the whole state, but a number of us, we need to know how it's going to affect the students and families in the school districts we represent.
Thanks.
That's being handed out. There's also a revenue estimate, Mr. Nauman. Have you seen the revenue estimate?
Madam Chair, I apologize. I don't have that information in front of me.
Madam Chair?
Has that been handed out, the revenue estimate?
Is
it
here?
This one?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Olson, is there a computer run that has this relative to current law?
Senator Olson.
I believe this is run against the February forecast.
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair and members, this is the data run that was handed out in committee when the committee processed the bill. It shows the February forecast data for fiscal 10, some breakout of February forecast for fiscal 11, and then the bill, which in this particular case is noted quadruple X, and that for fiscal 12 and 13.
So normally we have a column that says plus or minus. How is there a computer run like that?
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I can certainly provide one at your request.
Well, I'd like to see it. I don't know if anybody else wants to, but I'd like to see it.
Yes, I do too.
Senator Rust as well.
Madam Nauman. Chair, members, I'd have to go print that out and bring it back to the committee. If that's your pleasure, I could be pleased to do that.
Mr. Nauman, can you just give us an estimate as to what time you might need to accomplish that? I'm sensing that the members don't want to vote before they've had a chance to look.
Madam Chair and members, the printing, of course, happens fairly quickly. It's the copying that would take maybe 15 minutes, I would estimate.
Right. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I'm willing to vote. I just would like to see the run.
Well,
I think I know enough about what the bill does, but it's normally information that we're given.
Thank you. Senator Pogemiller, then maybe when we're done here, you can work through that. We do have a couple of amendments to the bill. Senator Michelle.
If you think, Madam Chair, now this fits, per Senator Olson's request, and I had a little conversation with Mr. Nauman and committee staff. So, Madam Chair, I don't believe there's any controversy to this. I would offer the A7. And ask,
7 will be distributed.
And give Senator Olson and Mr. Nauman a chance to describe this. But my understanding, Madam Chair, is that this helps to sync up the numbers between the tax bill that you're carrying, Madam Chair, and the K-12 bill that's before us.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'll give you the lay version, and then I'll give you the fiscal, Mr. Nauman, for the fiscal analyst's description. If decisions are made in the tax bill that affect our property values on which referendum and other levies are based, it can have an impact in the education bill, particularly in equalization formulas. And this would allow, if you make those decisions, that adjustment can be made so that it maintains the same level of revenue.
And Senator Olson, vice versa. When we've been making some aids and credits decisions that have a potential impact out in the community to schools, and we have booked in our fiscal note the funds back to your committee so we don't impact the property tax owners in the opposite direction. So there are lots of interactions going on here with all the different things we're doing, and we are the fiscal analysts are doing a great job of keeping track. And this amendment will accomplish making sure that those funds all go to the right places so there's no impact to the schools is the intention here. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, members, I'm happy to just say Senator Olson covered the waterfront pretty clearly. I'll just say that from a technical perspective, the language gives the mandates that the Department of Education recompute tax rates and equalizing factors so that we basically end up on a statewide basis at the same level of aid and levy within those programs that have a mix of pieces.
Thank you for the clarification. Any questions about the A7 amendment? Comments, or are there folks here that would like to testify one way or the other on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Michelle would move the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A7 is adopted. I understand that Senator Chamberlain also has an amendment. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, I have is a technical change as well. Page 68. The bill contains language for a piece addressing ballot language for levy, and this language adjustment to the effective date comes from the Secretary of State's office, Beth Frazier. It puts the effective date 53 days after following the enactment. That way we don't run into a lot of problems with balloting in this coming year. So it's a technical fix, page 68. To make sure we don't, unnecessarily mess up people's election processes.
Thank you. Questions or comments from members about the A8? Are there folks here that would like to testify one way or the other on the A8 amendment? Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, as Senator Chamberlain's, this is an amendment to the Senator Chamberlain's bill that is incorporated in this bill that begins on page 66, the ballot language, you may want to look at that. I think we've done something similar for operating referendum. This allows for, on bonding referendum, if one levy is ending and they're asking approval of one that will not change the amount for continued bonding, that language can be used.
I can see the amendments are just being handed out. I want to make sure there, if folks are here to testify about the A8 or have opposition or support for that amendment, if they'd like to approach now. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A8 is adopted. Senator Michelle would move that Senate File 1030 be recommended to pass. And be referred to the Finance Committee. Senator Pogomiller.
Ma'am, I have an amendment.
Senator Pogomiller.
The A6.
The A6 amendment has been offered. It'll be handed out. Senator Pogomiller, would you like to introduce your amendment?
I would, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, I've served with you many years, and I know that you you have the best interests of children in mind. I simply don't understand, though, how and I know you're committed to the reading program. I simply don't understand, though, how the construct of your bill creates a situation in some districts where they're going to have $200 or $300 per pupil less in 2 years than they have now. So that's troubling to me. And I know the governor's already spoken out on certain items related to that, and I agree with the governor's comments with regards to that. My amendment, though, does not deal with those issues. My amendment deals with what I think is kind of the key thing in the room this legislative session. This amendment restores your capping on special ed and on compensatory funding. As I understand the bill, it caps funding for both of those. I believe what that does policy-wise is pits those special ed-funded children versus general ed-funded children, and also compensatory children. I think that's the wrong direction for education. I think we should be trying to accomplish getting rid of the cross-subsidy in special education. As we're all aware, the federal government's not paying its fair share here. We know that. I wish they would. But I think as a state policy to cap those two programs, I believe, is a mistake policy-wise. And so what this amendment does is it puts a fourth tier on the income tax to pay for eliminating your capping, the bill's capping of special education and compensatory funding. And if I can find my sheet here, I can tell you how much money that is, as I understand it. And I understand that to be $142 million. So the amendment for the raising of $142 million is for those incomes over taxable over $250,000. And it simply allows the normal cost structure for special education and compensatory to stay in place without capping that. And I think that's the correct public policy. This does not eliminate your additional $50 to all the districts. This just simply on a policy grounds, I think the way the bill is going is not the right thing to do. And I think we should be willing to pay for doing the right thing.
Senator Pogemiller, did you introduce a bill to accomplish this?
Absolutely not.
Or ask for a hearing on it?
Absolutely not. Madam Chair, I was kind of surprised that the longstanding policy of the Education Committee was reversed. This has been a bipartisan, longstanding policy to try to eliminate the special education cap. And I was surprised to see that that's the direction the committee chose to went. Go.
Senator Pogemiller, this is not the governor's 10.95% income tax rate.
No.
It's an entirely different proposal at 8.16. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes, this raises the necessary 142, is that the correct number, 142 million or 145? Apparently, it might raise 145, so that'd give you an extra 3 million to work with.
Well, members, I would just be, I'm concerned about the lack of notice to the folks that would be affected by this. We've not had a hearing on this bill, but that's my concern. Senator Olson may have others. Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm absolutely willing to have the educational folks come in and talk about the impact of the cross-subsidy on special ed. I would love to have that test. I didn't know you would want to go there.
Senator Pogemiller, I also meant to include those folks that would pay these taxes.
Absolutely. Anybody who'd like to testify?
Senator Pogemiller, if the bill had been introduced, it would have been given a hearing for that purpose. But we're on the last day of amendments, and we've not had a hearing. Senator Olson, would you like to comment on the A6 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Pogemiller. The special education formula, it was not capped. It's allowed to grow with the students that have the need. But the growth factor is what was, in fact, captured and was a part of, along with the growth, there was a cap on the compensatory, and that growth was what is paying for the $50 each year on the formula. So every district is getting, for every child, $100 over the two. Actually, it's $150 if you count that it's grown, but formula is raised $50 each year. So technically, they are getting all of that money. The districts are getting that money. So that You didn't even raise that much money. You're obviously wanting to raise for a few of the districts that are affected directly. The growth factor was instated a number of years ago when there was money to pay for it. We have not had that. The reality is it doesn't, the services still need to be rendered. We've always had a cross-subsidy, and that is not going to change. The challenge of our funding of special education will continue, and it's not meant to pit any student against another. In the area of compensatory, we have been acknowledging and funding based on free and reduced price lunch, essentially, for the compensatory aid, and there's been a lot of money that's been invested in that. There's been a lot of questions raised also, in that I think there was some sense that we know the needs are different and the educational challenges can be different because of these circumstances, and yet we haven't seen the achievement gap budge one iota. In fact, embarrassingly, our state is at the bottom in terms of the having the worst achievement gap. And we aren't doing very well. If you were here for the joint meeting with the Tax and Finance Committee Peter Hutchinson made a presentation and talked about the growth in the funding of education in real dollar terms, and then showed the level of reading proficiency on the NAEP scores nationwide and in Minnesota, flat. So that is why we've been trying to focus on and want to work toward. I did not propose, and nobody proposed, eliminating compensatory aid. I mean, that would be obviously very damaging if you were just going to take that and spread it all. We were trying to be as merciful, if you will, and yet start down the track of being able to do some equity, but also some repurposing and focusing on, to me, it, and many in out in the foundation community, business community, and others are getting more and more focused on the issue of our young people, not many of them, 30% to 40%, not at a basic level by third grade, much less proficiency. And you and I know, we all know, that if you can't read, you're going to be hampered in being able to learn through all of the challenging programs and goals and objectives we have to be completing high school and to go on to college and complete college. We also have very strong evidence that the inability to read is probably the biggest factor in flowing into the special ed category of learning disabilities. National experts have told us time and again that the vast majority, up in the 80%, maybe even 90% level, are instructional casualties, not something that is inherent. And when they get into special ed, 5% ever get out of it. There's also a link, if you can't read well, that it can affect the emotional and behavioral. So that category, that's why we're trying to look at, keep the eye on the students, the instructional needs, the needs for achievement and learning, that ultimately, if we don't start down that path, we're going to continue to have a situation in special education that is absolutely unsustainable. And there are some remedies, and they are within the hands of both the policy and the implementation of that policy at our local school districts. And there's some exciting things going on and efforts to try to bring more of those to scale so that we can, in fact, achieve that. So I don't want you to lose sight of what the purpose of our educational endeavor is, as well as the investment that we have. And so I am not in any way wanting to be critical of Senator Pogemiller in terms of his commitment to education, because he's had it longstanding, and he represents a city that has many challenges, and we don't. It's not my objective to try to undermine that at all. But That is, we've taken that tack. This is a beginning step. It's your decision as to whether you want to raise taxes in this manner to do that. It would not be my choice.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogemiller, there are others that would like to weigh in. Just we'll get back to you. Mr. Nauman, is there a revenue analysis of this proposal?
Madam Chair and members, I'm not aware of a revenue analysis of this. The workings of this were Senator Pogemiller asked for the amendment last night, and I prepared the fiscal work on the how much it would cost to reinstate those provisions into the base law and pass those numbers to the tax staff, who then, I believe, did the work to come up with the appropriate rates to raise that proper amount of revenue. If I'm wrong about that, I'm sure they'll correct me.
Thank you. Senator Marty, and then Senator Michelle, and then Senator Pogemiller.
Madam Chair, you questioned whether this balances, didn't you? And I believe it does, the tax staff.
Senator Pogemiller, I asked if there was a revenue analysis. Pretty straightforward question.
Well, first you
Senator Marty,
questioned whether it was an appropriate amendment, then you questioned whether it's
Senator
accurate.
Senator Pogemiller, you're out of line. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, you were saying how we've all, on a bipartisan basis, been concerned about the special ed cross subsidy, as if that justifies making it worse, because I think that's what is happening. I bottom line think that those removal of funding from that and compensatory aid is going to hurt. I think you acknowledged you didn't get rid of the compensatory aid because, and I'm not familiar with the details of what you have in there in terms of that, but you tried to be merciful, I think you said, to it. But the bottom line is it is going to hurt, and Senator Pogemiller's bill would amendment would provide some funding, help the schools do that. And I frankly think our kids are worth it. And I'm disappointed. I know you don't support the income tax, but I think our kids are worth it. And I would love to see this thing pass because I think it's a good way to show our commitment to making it work. And in saying the cross-subsidy is a bad thing, which you agree it is, we are making it worse in this bill, and this would help correct that.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, the cross-subsidy might be worse. Special ed is not going to grow at 4.8% because of other provisions in this bill. It will not grow at that rate. But I would say that I don't think business as usual is in the interest of our kids either. And that's why I feel that it's important for us to try to shift that focus to how we can do a better job with the revenues we have. The same compensatory formula is left in place. It's just the growth that was captured to add to the formula. That's all being plowed back into education. The distribution is slightly different, but there's every district in the state receives compensatory, and that is not going away. And we did not change that formula. But the reality is that we have got to start to move our focus on how we improve the instruction and the achievement of our young people, regardless of what their circumstance. I'm tired of hearing, just because you're on free and reduced price lunch, that somehow that's an acceptable reason for not being able to achieve, whether it's reading or anything else. I think that is a subtle form of discrimination, and I think we ought to be attacking it where it needs to be done, and that is in the delivery of sound educational practice in the classroom by people who will set high expectations and not pass judgment on the conditions in which a child is either born or lives that somehow affects that they are not going to be able to learn.
Thank you. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Olson. I want to thank Senator Pogemiller because I think he's raised an important issue, and he's attempting to pay for it, too, which sets the policy debate in front of us. And so, Madam Chair, I appreciate you allowing us to stretch into the K-12 world a little bit because we all want to do that. That's a priority for all of us. I think one of the primary fundamental issues that this raises is, and Senator Olson touched on this, If we really believe, as a legislature, that the only way we can do things better in K-12 is more money, then I think you'd probably support the A6. If the answer is always more, funding into the same system, then you probably support this. And I won't support this. And I think what Senator Olson has done in her committee, and that she'll continue to do in as she goes out with a blaze of glory, if she really fulfills her her comments about this being her last term, and I hope it's not. But the discussion has to get back to achievement and prioritizing, attacking the achievement gap, attacking the dropout rate, and we're in a world of deficits and debt. And so how do you do that today? You do it with priorities and redirecting and repurposing. So we don't have more. We don't have more, but that doesn't mean we can't do it better. So I'll oppose the A6 today and look forward to further reforms, both from Senator Olson and my colleague, Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Pogemiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I just want to deal with this issue that somehow this is not an legitimate amendment. Senator Olson, was there a bill introduced to cap special ed? Did you have a separate bill introduced to do that?
Senator Olson?
There have been bills related to special ed, but I don't know that we had a special bill
Madam Chair, I don't serve on the Education Committee. This is the Tax Committee. I'm raising money. And I to somehow try to delegitimize the amendment, I don't get that. And then secondly, this revenue was produced by the tax staff. And it balances. And the income tax is not something new. I believe Governor Dayton has that. This is a modest piece of his proposal. I don't think there's one Minnesotan in this state who doesn't know that the governor believes we should raise income taxes to pay for things. And I agree with Senator Michelle. This puts it right in front of us. If education truly is the most important thing, now, Senator Olson has made an attempt to provide additional money to other districts. And I noticed that Senator Michelle's district is going to have $200 more per pupil. And that's fine. That's good. I think your children deserve it. My district's going to have $200 less. And it just seems to me that if we're trying to accomplish something, I absolutely agree that money isn't the answer always. But I do know this, larger class sizes isn't the answer. And in addition, this whole notion, I'm not going after your, I don't agree with your eliminating integration aid. That's not what this amendment deals with. This amendment has nothing to do with race. This amendment has to do with most vulnerable children in our system, special ed children and kids in poverty. It has nothing to do with race, this amendment. And what this amendment does is takes money away from the pot or caps off money that has been naturally growing to eliminate this cross-subsidy for every school district in the state. And the cross-subsidy will go up under this proposal. And that is the wrong direction policy-wise for the state, in my judgment.
Senator Pogemiller, Senator
Michelle. Oh, a roll call, of course. I would like to see a roll call, because this does put it right before you. Are you willing to pay for education or aren't you? And I don't think this a vote for this, Senator Michelle, is not a vote that you want to just throw money at things. You're getting $200 more for your kids. I get that. You don't need this money, apparently.
Senator Michelle.
I haven't even checked the run.
Oh, I did.
But I think the point is that as policymakers, we need to go far beyond our own school districts and what the numbers we're seeing for that. Senator Pogemiller is making a point here. And I think Senator Olson has actually addressed much of that point. So, Madam Chair, I fully think this is a legitimate amendment.
Thank you.
Senator Pogemiller. We've had a lot of discussion recently about, yes, does everything need a formal fiscal note? And Can these numbers be trusted? Can those numbers be trusted? I don't have any questions about this. This number has been provided
by our staff, and I think the Department of Revenue will verify these numbers. So this is not some outside group saying here's the number.
Madam Chair, I don't have any questions about the legitimacy of this tax increase.
And Senator Pogamiller, to that point, I asked whether there was a revenue analysis. That's a straightforward question, and it will be asked again today probably to make sure that we are tracking our spreadsheet as well as we can. The staff has been incredibly good, and I trust staff completely with their recommendations and their analysis. Okay,
Madam Chair, call the question, please. Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller, final comment.
So you, since this was prepared by Ms. Von Mosch, you're willing to accept that this is probably the number?
Senator Pogamiller, that was never a question. I asked a simple question, whether there was a revenue analysis. But I will point out that there may be interactions here, and we don't know whether there are interactions, but there may be. They have come up consistently in our work, and I don't know that, and staff doesn't know that. But nonetheless, I trust fiscal staff to have done an excellent analysis of the question at your request.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller.
I was just wondering if Senator Chamberlain would yield.
I'll yield.
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Chamberlain, was there something I said that urged that you felt that you should cut off the debate? I tried to keep this on the facts.
Senator Pogamiller,
I think it's clear you've made your point. You believe that we should raise taxes and continue doing what we've been doing, and that's fine. Beyond that, it's sophomoric, but that's all I have.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Senator Pogamiller, Senator Chamberlain. I wish to the amendment, Senator Pogamiller.
Well, I think Senator
Pogamiller, to the amendment, please.
Sure, to the amendment. I don't believe the amendment's sophomoric. Perhaps, Senator Chamberlain, you're not aware that I chaired the committee for 8 years with Governor Carlson, and I am not aware that either Governor Carlson, Governor Ventura, or Governor Pawlenty would take this step.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain, final comments here.
Madam Chair, one last comment, then I'll be quiet. You did chair, and we're still in a mess. So I say we change course, go forward, and take on this challenge and see what we can do. Senator Olson has taken courageous steps to try to fix this problem, and what you're doing is haranguing her and delaying this committee action simply to make some sort of point and statement. I think your point's been made. I'm willing to go on, and I have nothing further to say. Thank you.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller, to the amendment.
I've been here 30 years, and I've never had anybody call something that I've said factually sophomoric. Senator Chamberlain, I do think that's inappropriate, and I challenge you to claim you know more about the education funding system than I do. I don't think what I said was sophomoric. I believe that's inappropriate for you to call it sophomoric.
Madam Chair, I'm not calling your data and your knowledge sophomoric. I'm calling the conduct in this committee sophomoric. There's a distinction.
Members, it's going to be a long day, and we have many amendments, as you can see from the stacks, and so I'm going to ask everybody to just cool off just a little bit. I think everybody knows how we're going to vote on this amendment. Senator Olson, did you have a final comment on this amendment?
I think it's been debated fully, and...
Thank you. The clerk will call the roll on the A6 amendment.
Chair Ortman?
No.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Howe? Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Michelle?
No.
Senator Pogamiller?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
There being 7 no's and 5 yeses, the amendment is not adopted. Now, Senator Michelle would move that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pogamiller. All right, Senator Bach, excuse me.
Madam Chair, I was looking through the bill, and I don't know if there are other tax provisions in here we should talk about. But in my looking through it, I see a provision I think this committee should be aware of and should discuss on page 67, lines 67.25 through 67.33.
Senator Bach, do you want to describe what it has called your attention?
Madam Chair, line 67.3 makes a reference to statute number 275.6. And in 275.6, it refers to some language that has to be on the ballot when school districts are conducting referendums. And the current law says, by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting for a property tax increase. That's the current law. This committee has spent a great deal of time crafting that language. The Education Committee has always, many times, has tried to get around that language. And I think that's an honest statement for people that if you vote yes, your property taxes are going to go up. But when I look at what's currently in the bill, the Education Committee, in the case of capital projects, if they're going to renew an existing levy that they have for capital projects, they give some permissive language that the ballot language contained in 67.3, line 67.31 to 67.33, by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting to renew an existing capital projects referendum that is scheduled to expire. Madam Chair, you're voting for a property tax increase because the current law is that levy's going away. And if you vote yes, that levy is going to stay in place, and your property taxes will be higher than they would have otherwise been under current law. This committee spent a lot of time talking about this. So, Madam Chair, just so that we have something to discuss, I would move orally to delete line 67.25 to 67.33.
Thank you, Senator Bach, for bringing it to our attention. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I explained earlier, when this was amended at the request of the Secretary of State relative to the effective date, this language mirrors the provision that was provided for operating referendum. This adds that similar language to referendum for a new capital project. It is not bonding, but rather for levy for additional capital projects. And that, so that if a levy is expiring, an approved levy, and it is the voters are being asked to extend it at the same level, that would be an accurate statement to use. And I believe that I'm not sure if that has to be documented or at least approved, that verified that is the case before that language can be used.
Senator Olson, can you just clarify if there were other types of referendum, they would still have that same property tax notice, just these that relate to the capital projects would have this language?
Well, Madam Chair, you've already approved, or the legislature has already approved this language for operating referendum. If there's a renewal, they tend to run for 10 years, and if they're coming up for a renewal and they're not changing, it could have language that is comparable to this on the ballot. Printed in the bill, but that in fact is in law at the present time. This just applies that same principle to the capital project levy, not for bonding, but for capital projects.
Thank you. And Mr. Kroonquist, did you want to comment about this language and the need for it?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And we support the language that is in the bill now, and Senator Olson explained it very well. The same language is in current law. It was put into place in 2008 for the operating referendum. And now it was really an oversight at that time that we should have also had it really be part of the capital projects levies as well. So, again, the practice is in place now. It did have a lot of discussion in the Tax Committee in 2008, and the Tax Committee was actually the one that arrived at this language at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's no place on any kind of vote on increasing property taxes, regardless of the purpose, for school districts where taxpayers are told on the ballot that this will increase their taxpayers, their taxes. We don't do that anymore.
So, Madam Chair, I don't believe that this repeals the 275.60. It's only in these. It's only in the cases where it will continue at the same rate that this is allowed. The other language will be in operation and be placed on the ballot. When that is in fact the case, that their levy, that their taxes will go up. So it hasn't repealed that provision.
So, Senator Olson, this would be in addition to that language and not in place of that language?
Madam Chair, this is one additional exception that is comparable to what has already been approved, and I believe it was put in or approved in the tax committee. Whatever year it was you said, for operating referendum.
Thank you. Mr. Kronquist.
Madam Chair, and again, Scott Kronquist, if there's even a dollar increase in the levy, you have to use the language that Senator Ress is referring to, that you are voting for a property tax increase. You could only use this language if it's renewing an expiring referendum at the same rate.
Thank you. Senator Ress.
Madam Chair, and Senator Olson, the fact of the matter is, however, is if the referendum of whatever kind expires, then by voting for the ballot question, your taxes would have gone down, and now you're voting to increase them, and it's the same thing whether it's a new referendum or whether it is renewing an existing one. And it's not that, you know, I have never opposed a single referendum in my school districts. I have supported them, but, you know, transparency is something that school districts should be proud to display and to tell their taxpayers that the existing referendum, it goes away, the taxes go down if they vote to continue an existing referendum. Their taxes are going to bounce right back up again. So I just think that it's just a bit disrespectful for the taxpayers not to be on the ballot, not to be told this, even if this is what we have done before, even if this is a trying to copy what is on the ballot for continuing existing operating referendum. And, you know, you don't have to respond, but I'm not going to move to take it out. I just think it's just slightly disingenuous.
Thank you, Senator Rust. Mr. Kronquist, final comment here?
Madam Chair, thank you. Just one final comment. Well, two quick points. Number one, you will notice that the new language does say that the referendum is scheduled to expire. So we think that makes it clear to the voter that this is a referendum that was scheduled to expire. You're renewing it. And then the second point, though, is that we actually think this is more transparent. What we ran into was when we had straight renewals, the school district would spend a lot of time educating their community that this is a renewal. At the same rate, your taxes aren't going up. Then the voter would get into the voting booth, and the ballot question would come up and say, you're voting to increase your property taxes. And so the voters just whiplashed and not knowing who to believe, and then, of course, accused the school district officials of not telling the truth. And so we have not heard a single complaint from any taxpayer anywhere in the state since this change was made for the operating referendum. In fact, I think people have said it's a more transparent process with this language. So,
thank you. Senator Bach.
Nothing further, Madam Chair. I have an oral amendment.
Senator Bach has moved to delete the entire section,
right.
3, on Senate file, 1030, section Article 4, Section 3, beginning at 66.30 and going all the way through 68.3. All those in favor of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Michel would renew his motion that Senate File 1030, the Education Bill, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Senate File 1030 has passed the Senate Tax Committee. Senator Olson, thank you for your presentation. And Mr. Nauman, thank you for your work.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Members, I believe we are all here. Senator Skoy just walked out of the room. This is going to be a challenge all day long, I fear. Okay, we were going to maybe take up some amendments that might not have any opposition so that we could discuss them and perhaps vote while we wait for Senator Skoy to come back. Otherwise, we are backed up a little bit on Senate File 227 on some amendments that we'd like roll calls. I would like to offer at this point the A21. I am hopeful, but not confident. Just want to say I'm hopeful, not sure, that A21 will not require a roll call amendment. Members will remember that Senator Dames came forward and asked us if we could provide sales tax exemptions for the purchase of public safety radios, the 800 megahertz radios. And unfortunately, we did not have sufficient funds to pay for that or the retroactivity in his request. And so what I've asked council to do is prepare an amendment that would at least indicate our support for the purchases of these radios. I understand there's a requirement that our public safety organizations try and meet the standard of the 800 megahertz by the end of 2012. What this amendment would do is offer a sales tax refund to all those purchasing radios that have not yet received a sales tax exemption or refund, and it would be payable in 2014. And members, if you look at our fiscal note, you'll see that we have additional savings in 2014 and 15 that remains on the bottom line. So I'm hoping that you would extend your willingness to support this and indicate our support for the purchases of these radios and our commitment that we would fund the refunds in 2014. Senator Rest?
Did you pass the amendment?
Oh, I'm sorry. The A21 will be passed out. I'm sorry. Questions, thoughts, or comments about the A21 amendment? Senator
Madam Sengen, Chair, if I'm correct, this is to extend a sales tax exemption which certain communities, I think my own, have had to other areas of the state.
Right. Senator Sengen, many have had the exemptions passed in batches as they were upgrading on the technology. There have been a couple of years here where we have not extended the exemptions, even though some have purchased radios, and now we have a requirement the remainder comply by the end of 2012. And so what this would do is provide refunds to all those that did not either receive the exemption or a refund to date and make those purchases through 2012. And so those dollars remain on the bottom line in the out years here on our bill, and I'm hoping that we would authorize that refund in 2014 for all those that have had to pay sales taxes by that time.
Madam Chair, and so in a great sense, this is an issue of fairness.
Senator Sengen, I believe that's true.
Madam Chair, what was the impact
that
tax staff gave us?
I believe Ms. Von Mosch can speak to the impact.
Madam Chair, members, the amendment has the same effective date of after January 1, 2010 for the incurring of the cost that would be refundable. And for the general fund, the original bill was Senate File 267. The cost would be $10,879,000 in the first year, and then that drops down to lower amounts in the later years. The large amount in the first year is really because of the retroactive nature of the language.
Thank you. Senator Rest.
So, Madam Chair, so what does that do to your target? Just curious.
Senator Rest, doesn't have an impact in 2012, 2013. We've exceeded the targets for 2014 and 15, so we have extra savings on the bottom line and by that year. And so I'm hoping that we can at least state our determination that these radios should be provided exemptions or refunds by that time. Senator Rest.
Further question. I can understand where if someone has already paid the tax, that it would be in order to give them some relief, it would be a refund. But I wonder why not going forward, like we're trying to do in the capital equipment, why not just make them exempt so that they would not have to go through the red tape and the, you know, the overhead and the cost to apply for a refund. And I wondered if that even, you know, keep the dates and everything, but is that, Ms. Von Mosher, even the department, would that change the impact of the revenue? I mean, it'd be so much nicer if they could just, and I mean nicer and efficient and so on and so on.
Senator Russ, it did have a big impact because it was retroactive for the last several years.
No, I understand.
So it was large.
That.
And then the apparently the law enforcement agencies are being requested to purchase them all by the end of 2012. And so they can't take advantage of the exemption because it'll have that revenue impact, and that's why we're moving the refund to 2014.
So you don't even want them to.
They have to buy them
even further out now for it to be an exemption. What about after that time? Are we assuming that by by December 31st or January of 2013 that they'll all be purchased?
Senator Rest, they have been required to be 100% 800 megahertz standards by the end of 2012. So they'll be purchasing them in 2012 regardless of whether they have an exemption or not.
If we don't kick the can, then you have to count it in this biennium.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct, Senator Rest. Okay. Other questions or comments about the A21 amendment? Well, the chair would move the A21 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The A21 is adopted. Thank you, members. I believe we're all present and we could take up the roll call votes. Andy, if you would just let folks know, we'd like to take up those amendments. Now, I think they're here. Senator Limmer, Senator Rosen's outside, and we'll take up those. Let's see. It was the A16, Senator Marty's motion regarding the affiliate nexus. And we also have the A26 before us, Senator Pogemiller's motion to delete the authorization for local option sales taxes. Other amendments that might be offered at this time?
I have another couple of amendments.
On that article, or?
Well, it looks like we're ready.
We're still on income taxes, right?
Well, I'd like to take these that are lined up waiting for our roll call votes.
But they were all on income taxes, were they not?
Right. The A26 and the A16 both. We've had discussed.
I'm just trying to clarify for myself. So we're taking those ones that we had set aside that dealt with income tax and sales tax. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Rust.
So, and that's the first two articles?
Yes. Senator Marty would renew his motion, the A16 amendment that would impose the affiliate nexus standards in the sales tax. Further comments or questions? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I wasn't here earlier when you discussed this. But, you know, I couldn't help but think about this morning when I picked up the Pioneer Press and I saw the front page story on Best Buy. Front page story. How they are developing a state-by-state strategy to try to take on this, that the Amazons of the world are causing serious competitive problems for Minnesota companies like Best Buy and Target, and I'm not going to ask them to testify if they have somebody here, but all you have to do is read the paper today to see their CEO actually makes a statement that he's more hopeful about Best Buy's future, and if you've been watching the stock market and their profits, they're in serious decline. The CEO said in today's paper, he's quoted in today's paper, that they think Best Buy's future is more hopeful because more states are starting to adopt this very provision. Members, Amazon might well be a good company. I haven't bought anything from them, but they've got an unfair competitive advantage over Minnesota businesses that have bricks and mortar here. And if you care about Minnesota businesses that have bricks and mortar here, you should support this amendment.
Senator Bach, I would just renew my comment that there are some legal complexities involved in this issue. We heard about them. I just want to remind members it's not as clean a cut here as, well, we might like to think. So, a roll call has been requested by Senator Marty on the A-16 amendment, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Ortman?
No.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Hoffman? Senator Howe? Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Michelle?
No.
Senator Pogemiller?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman? Senator Hoffman passes. Senator Hoffman?
Affiliate Nexus.
No.
There being seven no's and five yeses, the amendment does not pass. We also have requested a roll call on the A-26 amendment, which would offered by Senator Pogemiller, deleting the authorization for cities to impose a local option sales tax under certain conditions without legislative approval. Senator Pogemiller, do you just want to speak in favor of your motion?
No, I think people understand the issue.
Okay. Senator Rest?
Madam Chair, could I just ask that Senator Pogemiller explain what his amendment does again while I'm trying to find it here?
Senator Pogemiller.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, this is I think this is Senator Ortman's proposal to eliminate the need for cities to come to the legislature to impose these local sales taxes for the various reasons. She has a list of, the bill has a list of reasons. And my argument simply is I think once we allow this, I just think they'll be back with more reasons and we'll have a lot of sales taxes all over the state.
So, Madam Chair, just a question.
Senator Rest.
So, because it just says delete on the language, are you also deleting those the sections that deal with granting specific communities local option sales tax?
Senator Pogemiller.
Just the general law application.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Others requesting clarification on what we're voting on here? Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it's clarification or maybe it is clarification, then a point. This does apply statewide, does it not, the provision in Section 9?
Senator Marty, it was Senate File 467. It would apply to all cities across the state that would seek authorization from their voters for a local option sales tax.
And, Madam Chair, I would argue that especially in the metro area, this is grossly unfair, where some communities have 5-10 times the retail, maybe 20 times retail of neighboring communities, and they could get a ton of projects paid for this way. And I think there's been a reason that we've been doing this in only in core cities and in greater Minnesota, and I strongly support taking it out because I think it would cause great inequities. And I say that as one who represents, I think Roseville is far and away the highest per capita retail, Bloomington, some of the other ones as well. It's grossly unfair to any of the neighboring communities. Those people shop in those cities, and they can get all their stuff paid for that way, and the other communities have to pay for their own plus pay for some neighboring community. I think it's just an equity issue, and I think we should take it out. And there may be some merit to trying to do this concept, but I don't think this is fine-tuned.
Thank you. To clarify the vote, a yes vote would delete the proposal
and a no vote would support the proposal that would authorize the cities their own local option sales tax authority under certain restrictive guidelines. So with there being a roll call has been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Ortman?
No.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Howe? Passes. Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Michelle?
No.
Senator Pogemiller?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
There being seven no's and five yeses, the amendment is not adopted. Now, members, it might make sense to take an accounting here of what we've done, where we're at. We've heard the education bill. That's passed. We're still going to need to hear the transportation bill with Senator Gimsey, which we're scheduled to do at noon. We heard the amendment, the A-10. I'm sorry. Okay. We've heard the A-10 on Cloquet. We heard the A-16 on the affiliate nexus. We had the A-26, which was on the authorization for local option sales taxes. We had Senator Rust's oral amendment on the ringtones, and we've acted on all of those amendments. We also had the A-11, which Senator Bach offered previously. Do you want to offer that again now, Senator Bach?
Madam Chair, I'd offer to take the A-11 off the table and remove the A-11, and I did talk with Senate counsel, and they tell me that even though they have authorization to raise the tax to 1%, they still have to have a second vote to move off of the half a percent that they previously voted for.
So, Senator Bach, you're renewing your motion on the A-11?
11.
Hermantown.
A-11 Hermantown.
Other comments or questions about the A-11? All those in favor of the A-11 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
The A-11 is adopted. We also had the A-7 amendment, which was previously offered by Senator Chamberlain on essential services. Do you want to act on that at this time, Senator Chamberlain, or would you like to delay?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Which one were you talking about?
The essential services. You were working on that. Is that still on hold for now?
Yeah, on hold for now. Thank you.
All right. And we had the A-17. Senator Daley and Chamberlain presented the maintenance of effort for counties, the reduction of the maintenance of effort requirements for counties. Further discussion, comments, questions
Madam,
about
Madam
that?
Chair, Senator, what did Bach. We? Is my sunset included on it?
It was amended, Senator Bach.
So it has a 2-year sunset. The provision is that council.
Yeah, we did.
I just want to know what we're voting on. Council, does it have a 2-year sunset?
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, yes.
Thank you. I might have stepped out of the room during that, Senator Bach. All right, questions or comments about the A-17 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying
aye.
Was there a roll call requested? I must have missed that too. A roll call has been requested, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Howe? Passes. Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Michelle?
Yes.
Senator Pogemiller?
No.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Rosen?
Yes.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
And Senator Skoy?
Yes.
There being 10 yeses and 3 noes, the A-17 is adopted. Members, we are caught up. And we have everyone in their seats. So the next, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I have an A-9 amendment that I'd like to have the committee consider.
Do we have that yet?
I believe it's going to be handed out.
Mm-hmm. Is that a property tax amendment?
This
Senator
is the, yes.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
Are we finished then with Articles 1 and 2?
For now, we are, Senator Rest. And I had said we would come back around if we needed to, if there are additional amendments that get raised at that
point. I'm sorry, I missed that comment.
No,
thank you
right
very much.
Madam Chair. Senator Rosen?
Because I do have an article or an amendment, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
And until everybody's ready, we're not going to vote. All so right. We're going to hear every amendment that everyone would like to be considered today. The A9 has been passed out, Senator Limmer. Would you like to describe the A9?
Yes, Madam Chair. Some of our members may have been personally lobbied by Senator Vanderveer on this. This is in regards to a nonprofit community service organizations. Organizations like the VFW and the American Legion currently receive a reduced property tax classification if they make a charitable contribution equal to their property taxes. And the intent of this amendment is to include payments for the replacement of a building destroyed by fire or other catastrophe in the contributions portion of nonprofit community service organizations that are required to make in order to qualify for a reduced property tax classification. The amendment is before you. I'll try and answer questions if there are any.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, could you give us an explanation? I assume this is you're talking about revenues from pool tabs and so on. What kind of building is it for the VFW or the gambling operation, or is it for somebody else's building? I mean, is there an example that Senator Vanderveer is going after where a specific building burned
down? Well, the example that Senator Vanderveer told me about was an American Legion or a VFW up in his area. And probably the best thing to describe the expenditure is found in State Statute 349.12, where an expenditure including a mortgage payment or other debt service payment for the erection or acquisition of a comparable building to replace an organization-owned building that was destroyed or made uninhabitable by fire or catastrophe, or to replace an organization-owned building that was taken or sold under an eminent domain proceeding. That's what the law currently is defined as. The expenditure may only be for that part of the replacement cost not reimbursed by insurance for the fire or other catastrophe or compensation not received from a government unit under the eminent domain proceeding.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Marty.
I understand that they can use what they can use it for now. The question is, whose building are we talking about? Are we talking about the VFW post or whatever burned down and they want to rebuild it, or are we talking about their building, they're donating money, charitable contribution, to fund somebody else's replacement building? And if so, who is replacement building?
I believe, Senator Marty, it's
Senator
for
Limmer.
Their building.
Senator Marty.
It would be destroyed.
Senator Limmer.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, or Senate Counsel, does this language say that? I mean, it says replacement building. I don't know if we're talking about their own building, in effect.
Well, since I'm doing this on
Senator
behalf
Limmer.
Of Senator Vanderveer, I'm going to
paging Senator Vanderveer.
I'm going to send it to, or have our counsel maybe describe it a little bit better. She ran away.
She's getting the statue. Away. She's.
Is there anyone in the audience who can speak to the A9 while we get some staff work on this?
Away.
To the A9? Ms. Zoff, you ready?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the intention is, from the description that Senator Limmer read, it sounds as if it is intended to enable the organization to spend money to rebuild its own building, and that would be counted as a charitable contribution. This property tax classification for these organizations is contingent on the organization making annual charitable contributions at least equal to their previous year's property taxes. So there's a measurement that they have to meet for contributions, and this amendment would enable them to count the expenditures for their replacement buildings could be counted to meet up to 50% of the contribution requirement.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senate Counsel, so presumably VFW post burns down. They are required, in order to get the property tax classification they're looking for right now, they have to make their charitable contributions have to equal at least the value of the property taxes. And under this, because they're allowed to do some expenditures right now for their own building, but now they could make up to 50% of those donations could be the ones they're doing to help pay off parts of the replacement building that weren't presumably covered by insurance.
Senator Limmer.
Are you directing that to me or Senator? I thought it was Senator Council, whoever. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, the reference that is cited in here out of the lawful gambling statute describes an expenditure for the erection or acquisition of a comparable building to replace an organization-owned building. So it is for their own building that they'd be able to count the expenditures for that purpose will be able to constitute up to one half of the charitable contributions that they have to meet.
Further discussion on the A9 members. Senator Limmer moves the A9. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
A9 is adopted. Additional amendments, members.
Which article is she on? Is it time for property taxes yet or not?
Are you ready for
anything? Yeah, property taxes.
Senator Pogamiller?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to get some assessment from, has the Revenue Department done a property tax analysis yet of the bill? Do we know where we're at on property taxes here?
Looks like we have the department ready to come to the table here. Thank you, and please identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Ouellette with the Property Tax Research Department in the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We have done our best to put all the elements of the bill together into a model run, and the overall results are reflected in the revenue estimate that you have before you, although they're kind of buried, so I'll go over the results. But our estimates of the impacts are that for a calendar year 12, the net property tax impact would be an increase of $302 million.
Senator Ordman.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and Mr. Ouellette. I just learned from the administrator that it's not been handed out yet, but we are going to hand it out right now. It's being copied, and it will be handed out. So I'm sorry for the interruption, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Ouellette.
So for calendar year 12, the estimate is $302 million. Calendar year 13, $178 million. Calendar year 14, $125 million. These impacts reflect the changes in net property taxes due to the conversion of the market value credit into a tax capacity reduction, as well as assumptions about changes in levy behavior by local governments due to the aid reductions and the other tax-based changes in the bill. Those numbers do not include the impacts of changes in the homeowner and renter PTR, which are changes that some characterize as tax increases, but they do not change the actual tax bills that are sent out to the taxpayers. That is the highest level overview. If you'd like have additional questions, I can attempt to answer them.
Senator Pogamiller?
And that and then there's a business tax cut. Does that net that out or not? There's
Mr. Ouellette.
The statewide business property tax.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Pogamiller, that is net of that is included in those numbers.
In those numbers, okay.
Yeah. So if you were to set that aside, the tax increases for the other property would be much higher than that.
And what is the difference there? If you net out the statewide business property tax, or if you exclude it.
Madam Chair and Senator Pogamiller, I don't have the exact calculation, and my state property tax numbers are on a fiscal year basis that I have before me, so I'm a little bit mixing apples and oranges. But in the first two fiscal years, the state property tax reduction is $14 million approximately.
So if you added the 302 and the 178 and subtracted the 114, that would give you a number?
What was the second number? The
302 and 178, that's the net number you gave us for 12 and 13.
Yes.
And then, so because the 114 is a two-year number.
It is, although it's a fiscal year number, so it's not exactly right, but pretty close.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So that's, but roughly speaking, yeah, that would be the impact.
Thank you.
Senator Pogue? Mr. Ouellette. Go ahead. No, go ahead. Senator Pogue, further?
Yes, Madam Chair, then I'd like to offer the A22.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Senator Skoy?
I have a question for Mr. Ouellette.
Mr. Ouellette, how did
the department analyze the PILT reduction? Is that on a dollar for dollar property tax increase, or how did you analyze that?
Senator Skoy, could you repeat your question? I had a hard time hearing it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was curious as to how the department analyzed the payment in lieu reduction, if that was a dollar for dollar, or if how they dealt with that.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, the PILT payments to counties were treated like general purpose aid cuts, so they were added to the total aid cut for jurisdictions, and then an assumed levy back was calculated on the combined impact of the general purpose aids and the PILT. So it was treated like a county program aid reduction.
Okay, and Madam Chair, Mr. Ouellette, I know that the department and this technical working group that you have has come up with this 50% levy back calculation, but in the abstract, if you go out enough times, if the government doesn't levy 100% of it back, they're going to change what they're doing. And so on these aids and credits stuff, I mean, either they're not going to provide services on these PILT lands, or they're going to levy it back 100%. So I'd just like to make that point.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, that's correct. Another piece of information that is useful is, there's a certain amount of aid cuts, and through our modeling, we assume that a portion of that is replaced with property taxes, but there's another portion that we assume is not levied back in property taxes, and those dollars are going to translate at the local level to reduce spending, using up of reserves potentially in the short run, increasing other revenue sources like fees. And those numbers, because our levy back assumption is lower than it has been historically, that means the other things that the local governments would have to do by way of reducing spending or increasing other revenue sources is going to be higher. So if you cut a dollar of aid, it's going to be a combination of some amount of property tax increase and some amount of reduced spending or other budget adjustments. When our assumptions change, it doesn't change that total amount of cut. It just changes how much is through property taxes and how much is resolved through other actions at the local level.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Mr. Ouellette, well, before you discuss the amendment, I just wanted to ask you, Mr. Ouellette, along the same lines here, the Department of Revenue would have scored the House File 130, Senate File 60 reductions, and I'm wondering if you have that information available as well.
Madam Chair, not with me at the table, but I can get it.
If you could, because I think that's important to the discussion, because my understanding is, and I'm hoping that you can provide the actual analysis numbers here, but that when we took up Senate File 60 and House File 130 and passed that on the Senate floor, it actually had a larger property tax impact than the one we have now, that we've incorporated additional reductions and reached a higher level of our target, the entire $780 million, with a smaller impact than we had with Senate File 130. And I'm hoping that I can confirm that. I think that's true.
Absolutely.
But I'm hoping that you can confirm that, because that really has been an effort on the part of the committee to say, let's see if we can't minimize the impact of the reductions that have already been made by the legislature. And we actually did that. I mean, those were the 2010 reductions that were adopted last year with Pawlenty and the Senate and House as they were constituted last year. And I believe even by reaching this target, we've had a smaller impact. So if you could help me with that, Mr. Ouellette, I'd love to see how that compares to what you've got. I haven't seen the revenue analysis yet on this, so it's going to be passed out, and we'll have that conversation a little more in depth in a little bit. Senator Bach and then Senator Skoy.
Well, Madam Chair, that may be true as it relates to local government aid, but there are other things happening in this bill. I mean, last year there weren't PILT reductions. I mean, some counties are impacted differently. There weren't PILT reductions last year. There weren't reductions in the SFIA program. There wasn't the elimination of disparity reduction aid. I mean, I don't think the statement is generally true statewide. It may be true as it relates to local government aid, but when the totality of the bill is considered, I'm not sure that's accurate.
Senator Bach, that's what we're going to look at, and I believe it's true, and that even incorporating those reductions, I believe we still have a smaller impact. But we're going to discuss that when we have the information in front of us.
Well, Madam Chair, but I think it would depend on the county. Remember, the PILT impact, right. The disparity reduction aid only impacts selected cities and selected counties. So I think it would depend on where you live. If you're
no
impacted
question.
Greater under this bill than last year.
Well, and no question, Senator Bach, but Senator Pogemiller is making the point of the $302 million. Which is an important fact for all of us, and I just want to say if we're going to have that conversation on a statewide basis, we should compare where we were before to where we are now, because I think we've made some improvements. Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach was making the same point that I'm going to make, and that is that this considerable shifting going on between jurisdictions with these changes, and there's very few businesses that are impacted by the statewide business tax reduction on these PILT lands. I mean, just by definition, they're not there. So it's a significant change for these jurisdictions with a lot of public lands.
Senator Skoy, I agree with you, but I would say that the aid was also disproportionate in different regions. And so if you're going to reach the reductions, then it's going to have a disproportionate impact because the relief was disproportionate.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Skoy,
the reason that there is aids paid into those jurisdictions is because in 03 there was a formula that was devised that based the aid on objective factors, not subjective judgments. And I'm reading from former Governor Pawlenty's briefing summary. And the expenditure need is subtracted, the revenue capacity is subtracted from the expenditure need, and you come up with the city aid. And this is a slightly older than six-year-old formula for LGA, and it's been under significant attack in the last number of years. So I think that you've got this need-based formula, and they have needs. That's why they get aids. And that's the rationale behind having local government aid. And I'll quote here. It says, "This new formula is based on fairness and original intent of the program, not politics." And we are stepping quite a ways away from this LGA formula reform that was done April 30th of 2003.
And Senator Skoy, I would just point out that you can't reduce aid from regions and cities that don't get aid.
But, Madam Chair, there are certainly tax implications that affect those areas of the state, and I think we'll have an opportunity to continue this discussion as we analyze everybody having some of the skin in this budget deficit game.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. Would you like to present your amendment, Senator Pogemiller?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A22, ask for roll call. And the amendment is structured similarly to that education amendment. It uses a scaled-down version of Governor Dayton's fourth tier, and it's for taxable incomes over $250,000, and it raises $290 million, or $284 was the number I was trying to hit. And the purposes of that money are to use that money to restore to the governor's level on local aids for cities, counties, and PILT. So this does not affect the market value credit reform that you're trying to implement. I totally don't understand what's going on there yet, but I do note that Mr. Schreiber's testimony yesterday and the discussion you've given of it, we do have a problem there in the market value credit in terms of its representation. And so I have not included that here because there's something there that I think we're all going to be able to agree on in the at some point, and it may be what you've got now. I don't totally understand it yet. So this is related just to local government aid, county aid, and PILT.
Thank you, Senator Pogue-Miller. Other questions or comments about the A22 amendment?
Madam Chair,
Senator Skoy.
This amendment would directly address the issue that we just talked about of everybody in the state having some impact to the tax changes in this bill, and I support Senator Pogue-Miller's effort.
Other questions or comments? All those in favor of roll the A, roll call is requested. We'll have a roll call, and I believe Senator Michelle is on his way here, so we'll just pause briefly for him to arrive.
Madam Chair.
Chair Pogue-Miller.
Then I just, and then the next amendment I'm going to have also, this really just, I think, pretty much crystallizes the differences that are we're confronting here, budget reductions in property taxes versus an income tax increase. I kind of think that's where we're at as a group.
So. Senator Pogue-Miller, I don't disagree. I think it's pretty straightforward, and I think people know what they think on this issue. The roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll, and we know that Senator Michelle is on his way. So.
Chair Ortman?
No.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Michelle? Senator Pogue-Miller?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Senjem?
No.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
And Senator Michelle?
Pause briefly as he comes. He's on his way. Head on, huh, Jeff? Senator Pogue-Miller, would you mind if we let Mr. Ouellette testify? He's got an answer to my question while we wait for Senator Michelle. Without objection from other members, if anybody has a concern about that, we'll pause. Seeing none, Mr. Ouellette, do you have some information about where we were at previously?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate research staff found for me a document from Senate File 82, which was the Senate position for or bill companion to House File 130 that eventually was passed by the legislature. There are some important differences between this bill and that bill. The cuts to local governments were approximately the same, although you now have a PILT cut that wasn't in that bill. You've added the market value credit conversion, which has a pretty significant tax impact. The other difference between what we scored then and what we scored now is our microdata assumptions on levy behavior are different now than they were back then. But that being said, at the time of Senate File 82 in January, we did estimate the net tax changes from that bill for calendar year 12 to actually be almost identical to this bill, about $302 million. In the out biennium in Senate File 82, the impacts on property tax were projected to be a little bit less than what they are in this bill, $151 million in each 13 and 14, which is is about $27 million less in 13 and about $26 million more in 14, so it's almost a wash. Over the three-year period, the property tax impacts were projected to be about the same. knowing those differences between the bills that I just mentioned. So really the net impact is largely the same on net property taxes in this bill as in the Senate position. Now, House File 130, as it was ultimately passed, didn't have any cuts to local governments in 13 and 14, so the property tax impacts of that bill, as it was finally agreed to, would have been a whole lot lower than Senate File 82 with the cuts extended in the out years.
Thank you, Mr. Willett. And can you just, would I be correct if I said that we have reached even deeper reductions or made further reductions with the same overall property tax impact? Because now you're incorporating some reductions that were not included in Senate File 82.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. And much of that has to do with, some of that has to do with the change in assumptions, which means we're assuming that more of the aid cuts would translate into other budget behavior besides property tax increases
right.
at the local level.
Thank you. Right, the clerk will close the roll.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought we were waiting for Senator Michelle.
Senator Pogemiller, if you'd like us to wait, we will wait.
I would if we could.
Madam Chair.
Senator Russ.
While we're waiting, when is the transportation bill?
We had scheduled it for 1 o'clock,
for
Senator
one.
Rust. Okay. And if you'd like, we can hear the Senate transportation bill and then take a brief break for lunch or whatever folks need, or we can continue on. Senator Rust, do you have a preference?
Continue on.
Others with a preference?
You can close the roll. You can close the
roll. Well, he's here.
Oh, okay. He's here. I don't know. No, I know, but I just like to. Here he comes.
You're
enough.
Stay here. I need to vote.
Another income tax increase to restore our jobs. No, no, they're
no.
Senator Michelle.
No.
One more time. No, I'm just kidding.
This one.
Senator Michelle votes no. There being seven no's and five yeses, the amendment is not adopted. Senator Pogemiller, did you have another one?
I just have one more, yes.
All right. Senator Pogemiller.
It's the A24.
Senator Pogemiller, it's being handed out. Would you like to?
Yeah, I'd move the A24 and ask for a roll call. And, Madam Chair, this follows the same theme. This is also fourth tier. It raises a little more than either of the last two. It raises $426 million, and it's only for incomes over $250,000. And the purpose of the money is to restore or get to the governor's level on the University of Minnesota and MNSCU. And the reason I'm offering it here is because it is a tax increase, and I recognize that it will probably take a tax increase to get to the governor's level of funding for higher education. And I know that you would like to cut business property taxes, and that has been tied to K-12 over the years, and I'm not dealing with that. But I just think at some level we need to consider the future of our higher ed situation here. And I absolutely am willing, obviously, willing to raise income taxes on those who I think are able to contribute now to protect our higher ed institutions.
Questions or comments for Senator Michelle? Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pogemiller, I haven't been on the higher ed committee for a month now, I guess. But I'm surprised at the size of these numbers on page 3. I was under the impression that the governor was reducing funding to higher ed by $185 million. So these numbers are on top of that $185 million?
I'm going to, Senator Consul has the.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, these numbers are the total of what the governor would have recommended for those appropriations.
So
this gets us to the governor's level, as
Senator
I understand
Pogemiller.
It.
Senator Pogemiller.
Is that correct?
That's what I'm told.
Yes.
Senator Pogemiller, did
well,
I hear you
Madam
right
Chair,
that?
Madam Chair, could I finish?
Excuse me, Senator Skoy, I will get back to you. I just have a clarification question. Senator Pogemiller, your amendment, it raises $426 million, and then does it spend that $426 million
on higher
page
ed.
3?
Yes. Apparently it spends, apparently the number is 410.378. and the close, you know, they could get to 426. So, again, they tried to get the number close.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the Senate is proposing to cut $446 million more from the University of Minnesota and Minsky than the governor is proposing?
26.
Senator Pogamiller?
426, I believe.
426?
Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you.
Questions or comments about the A24 amendment? A roll call has been requested. No further comments or questions. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Ortman?
No.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Howe? Pass. Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Michelle? Senator Pogamiller?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Senjem?
No.
And Senator Skoy?
Yes.
There being seven no's and five yeses, the amendment is not adopted. Other amendments about income taxes, sales taxes, or property tax aids and credits at this time?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, we talked about this briefly, and I know this is a bill that I have and Representative Davids has in the House. I have the A4 amendment. I am not going to offer it at this time. But it's basically to it allows the temporary federal rules on charitable donations for organizations like Food Shelves, Second Harvest, to be permanent and to apply permanently to the Minnesota law. Because right now the federal law has been extended. So there is a push to allow producers that grow produce or not even organic food, but that want to donate their extra supplies to a food shelf to have that that tax exemption that other, like the Super Values or the Cubs or whatever, if they donate food to a food shelf. I would prefer to have a full-blown hearing on this, Madam Chair, if we could. And perhaps this is something that I know would be supported by this committee. And I'm hoping that you will allow a committee hearing on this and perhaps fight for it in our conference committee. But I will not offer this amendment at this time.
Senator Rosen, I appreciate that, and we would be willing to have a hearing at a future date.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Senator Rosen? Are there other amendments that folks would like to offer? Senator Rest?
Are we at Article 4?
Pardon me?
Are we at Article 4?
Yes, Senator Rest.
Yes, ma'am. And I have the A13 amendment.
Yeah.
Senator Rest, what was the number?
A13.
The A13. Maybe. Being handed out, Senator Rest, would you like to let us know what's in the A13 amendment?
Members, I would direct your attention to page 53 in the lead-on, having to do with instructions to and prescriptions, as a matter of fact.
Senator Rest, can you speak a little louder?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Having to do with directions to the property tax working group to direct them to find ways of eliminating fiscal disparities, and I think that although that may be something that the legislature considers seriously, that particular direction is premature. And I would also direct your attention to in previous years we have passed and are waiting for the report from the Commissioner of Revenue, and I'm just going to read this from last year's tax bill. The Commissioner of Revenue shall conduct a study of the Metropolitan Revenue Distribution Program, which is called Fiscal Disparities, By February 1st of 2012, the commissioner shall submit a report to the chairs and ranking minority members of the House and Senate consisting of the findings of the study and identification of issues for policymakers to consider. The study must analyze the extent to which the benefits of economic growth of the region are shared throughout the region, especially for growth that results from state or regional decisions. Secondly, the program's impact on the variability of tax rates across jurisdictions of the region. Third, the program's impact on the distribution of homestead property tax burdens across jurisdictions of the region. And fourth, the relationship between the impacts of the program and overburden on jurisdictions containing properties that provide regional benefits, specifically the cost those properties impose on their host jurisdictions in excess of their tax payments. Madam Chair, I think that it's a reasonable for the legislature to wait for the Commissioner of Revenue's study that actually is an analysis rather than prescribing what the study's results would be. And I would hope that we could back off from that prescription that you have in lines 53.5 and 6, and instead take up the whole realm of what is the proper role of the Metropolitan Revenue Distribution Program, fiscal disparities in the 2012 legislature. And I would just add that I've been trying since, 1987 to reform the fiscal disparities program, because I thought even at that point, having it that we it was having some distorted effects. But I think simply to have a prescription to the property tax working group is just going beyond the pale, and to do it in a reasonable way to make some changes there, I would propose that we just simply need to wait for the results of this study rather than have those efforts duplicated by another group that would have distinct biases coming to a study that the Commissioner of Revenue would not have with regard to it. So that it's in that spirit, Madam Chair, not because I don't think there probably should be some changes made to fiscal disparities, but just because I think they'll better made based on an analysis done by professionals and economists in the field. So I move the A13 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Arrest. I appreciate your work on this issue as well and your advocacy. I would ask members to oppose the Senator Arrest amendment. I do, and the reason why is that we are the policymakers, and rather than these working groups make recommendations to keep or that it's difficult to eliminate fiscal disparities, I was hoping to enlarge the scope of the work, not limit it, but to add. There are two working groups going on, Senator Rest, and what I've asked one of these groups to do with this portion of the bill is to, if you were working with an assumption that it was going to be eliminated, what would it look like? And then if that were the case, they would make that recommendation, that finding of what would it look like to eliminate. Then we've already been given a recommendation about what the best way to eliminate it would be. We can then, as policymakers, evaluate what the impact of that plan would be and decide whether that's the policy direction we want, instead of us trying to fashion a result here in the legislature without the appropriate time and resources to consider how you would best eliminate. And that's the effort here that I've included in our bill. Ms. Zoff, would you just clarify that there are two working groups impacted here?
Madam Chair, yes. There is a group that's currently working on to analyze the fiscal disparities system, as Senator Rest pointed out. This would be the effect of the provision on page 53 of the bill would be to also ask the property tax working group to analyze an approach to the elimination of the fiscal disparity system. So there would be the two groups operating.
Well, and Madam Chair, I would, with regard to the working this working group, and I'm sure all very capable people, but it seems to me that their fiscal disparities, for those of us who have worked on it for, what is this now, 24 years, is an extremely complex system, and it seems to me that when we're asking people from who are homeowners and members of the Minnesota Farm Bureau and the Minnesota Farmers Union, that these are not issues that are maybe for the homeowners, if they're from the metropolitan area, would have some interest in it. But I think that the Farm Bureau and the Minnesota Farmers Union, these are not issues that are ones that I think that they would bring any particular relevant experience to. And I think that we, as policymakers, we should be making decisions based on good analysis and evidence, and not based on a bias that comes from on this particular issue, which has become extremely volatile, and particularly in the last couple of weeks, that we should wait and let the that study be done, and then take careful action next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rust. Other questions or comments on the A13 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bob.
Kind of to Senator Rest's point, the property tax group is now going to study taconite taxes, net proceeds taxes for non-ferrous. It seems like if we're going to do that, we need to have somebody that's familiar with that or has some skin in the game relative to those taxes. It seems like adding a 14th person to the working group, and I would just suggest the commissioner of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, or designee, which is the same language we have for the commissioner revenue on line 53.18. These are, any changes in this have dramatic impacts on property taxes in the taconite relief area, and it seems only right, if we're going to expand this, that we expand the working group so that somebody with some knowledge of those things is participating in the working group. So, Madam Chair, if I could, Council could suggest an oral amendment where it would fit to add a 14th person, and that it be the Commissioner of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board or their designee.
Ms. Zoff.
Madam Chair, on page 53, on line 25, we would strike and on line 27, after union, insert a semicolon and after line 27, insert 11, the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation or designee.
Senator Bach, would that be your motion?
Madam Chair, that's my oral amendment. I'd really appreciate the committee's support.
Well, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Bach, Senator Skoy.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought that the Rest Amendment was adopted.
It was, Senator Skoy.
And that would mean that they wouldn't be studying non-ferrous minerals and mining property, et cetera, because she removed
Senator
that from
Skoy,
the bill.
Senator Skoy, her amendment only reached as far as B1. Which was the fiscal disparities.
Oh, okay.
And so they will still be studying the taconite and non-ferrous.
Well, yeah. I apologize.
Was it adopted?
Senator Bach. It was.
The Rest Amendment was adopted?
Yes, sir, it was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because we
have a fair
one,
chair.
So now this
I'm two for two.
Huh?
Two for two, Senator Rust.
Did Senator Rust know it was adopted?
Yeah.
And Senator Bach?
Give me all your amendments.
I have very good hearing, Senator Buck. Very good hearing.
Well, Madam Chair, considering the committee was, maybe I should have Senator Rest frame up the amendment to, to delete the study. It's a very, very complicated issue, taconite taxes. And you saw just briefly when Mr. Wagstrom from the Department of Revenue presented it, he said he had been at the department for 28 years, and I think he, at one point, he said he's not sure he totally understands it. It's very complex. And this working group with people from the Chamber of Commerce and the League of Cities and the Association of Townships is not going to have the knowledge that they need to make suggestions to this legislature. I mean, just not that I'm against suggestions to make it better. I just think they're not going to have, and probably not going to have the interest in delving into it either. So I guess rather considering, maybe Senator Rest could tell me what lines, and maybe she could offer my amendment. Maybe I could be as successful as she was.
Senator Buck, I had a question. Are you concerned at all that the 13-member group will become a 14-member group?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd withdraw my oral amendment if Senator Rest would move an oral amendment to delete lines 53.7 to 53.10, and then we wouldn't need a 14th member.
Well, Senator Buck, I'm hoping Senator Rest won't do that. I think this is a very important portion of what we should be studying around here. But Senator Rest, I leave it to you.
Senator, Madam Chair, and Senator Buck, I think, as I have often talked about, there are issues that are extremely important to those of us in the metropolitan area. There are those issues that are important to those of you that are concerned with mining. I can tell you what it would be. It's page 53, lines 7 through 10, but I myself would prefer not to offer the amendment and would encourage you to do so.
Senator Bach, you're renewing your motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to second the Rest motion of deleting lines 53.7 through 53.10.
And are you then withdrawing your motion,
and then
Senator Buck?
I withdrew my my request on the 14th person.
Senator Rest, are you making the motion on behalf of Senator Buck? And Senator Tomasoni, who is here in spirit?
Well, I guess I know what I should do here then. I think actually what that would amount to then, with the adoption of the previous motion, is to simply delete section 1, because that would take care of the new language. So we would need, if we wanted to meet Senator Bach's request, Madam Chair, I would move to delete section 1 of Article 4, starting on page 52.
Well, and Senator Rest, I would speak against the motion at this time. I think this is very important for us to study. And with all due respect to Senator Bach and his comments here, I hope that members will oppose the amendment by Senator Rust. Other questions or comments about Senator Rust's motion? All those in favor of the Rust motion on the new section B1 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment is adopted.
She's good.
You're doing well, Senator Rust.
Senator Rust.
Other amendments, Senator Rust? I'm afraid to ask. Senator Rust.
Madam Chair, it is to the tax increment financing article. If you want me to wait, it's after 1 o'clock.
Well, we do have Senator Gimsey. Is he here, Senator? Senator Gimsey is here, and if we could take time for Senator Gimsey and the transportation bill members. Senator Rest, don't work on too many amendments over there now.
Madam Chair. Well, Senator Gimsey's coming up. I have gotten the computer run now on the education bill, and I don't know why I was interested in it, but it cuts $500 per pupil out of my district. I thought I was fairly restrained for a $500 per pupil cut.
Senator Gimsey, welcome to the committee. We have your Senate file 898 before us.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate file 898 is the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill, and thank you for the opportunity to present the provisions that bring the bill to the tax committee, and the one that brought it here is an aviation tax adjustment. What it affects is just the aviation account within the transportation.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, could you pull the microphone closer, please?
Sure.
This touchy area.
The portion of the bill, is that better, Senator
Rosen? Gimsey.
The portion of the bill that brings it here is the aviation tax adjustment that is something that has been worked on for a number of years in the Transportation Committee, trying to find a solution to the high registration fee that is charged in Minnesota on an annual basis. And so the parties have worked out an agreement to reduce what is a very high registration fee in the state of Minnesota and make some adjustments within that account using the fuel tax on aviation fuel. And I think I'll have Ms. Boyd with Senate Council or Senate staff just review for you the provisions of that piece of language, which is in the bill on page, starting on page 36.
Thanks.
Do we have a spreadsheet, Senator Gimsey? That would include this line, Ms. Berezovsky? I think it's been passed out. Has it been passed out, members?
We do have a spreadsheet, and I think it was... Staff is telling me that it has been given to the committee.
It's on its way to be passed out, I believe, members. Questions for Senator Gimsey?
Madam Chair?
Senator Gimsey.
Would you like Ms. Boyd to kind of go through the structure of the portion of the bill that is affected?
That would be that? Welcome, Ms. Boyd. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the sections that deal with the aviation taxes that bring us to taxes committee today start on page 36 of the first engrossment of the bill, starting at section 19 on line 3615. This section states that air flight property tax generated in fiscal year 12 and 13 shall may not exceed $8 million in either fiscal year. Current forecast is $7.8 million projected to be received from property tax in those years, and it just puts a cap a little over that. It also states that taxes and penalties paid or anticipated to be paid in those years that are attributable to previous years may not be considered in this cap. The State Airports Fund expects a back payment of taxes from Northwest Airlines in fiscal year 13 of about $4.2 million, and it just states that those are not to be considered in the cap. Section 20 raises the excise tax on jet fuel to 10 cents per gallon. Current law states that it's imposed at the same rate as aviation gasoline, which is set in a previous subdivision of the same section of statute at 5 cents. So this raises it from 5 cents to 10 cents on jet fuel only. Section 21 is an exemption from excise taxes on aviation gasoline or jet fuel for commercial aerial applicators. Current law gives this exemption to ambulance services. Section 22 at the bottom of page 36, under current law, any payer of the excise tax on aviation gasoline or jet fuel may apply for the listed reductions to these excise taxes. And this section amends that to say that the refund is now available to those who pay the excise tax on aviation gasoline or who are subject to the air flight property tax.
Thank you, Ms.
For the rest, I'm going to actually pass it to Ms. Berezovsky.
Ms. Berezovsky, I think the spreadsheet has been passed out.
Madam Chair and members, the remaining sections have to do with the aircraft registration tax, and they basically change the basis of the calculation of that tax from value-based to weight-based. So the first section is Section 24, and it brings in a definition of maximum takeoff weight. Then Section 25 provides that Minnesota aircraft, those that use Minnesota airports or Minnesota airspace, as long as they aren't otherwise exempt,
will be taxed in lieu of all other taxes based on maximum takeoff weight for registration periods that begin on July 1st of 2011. So that's where the change takes, the basic change takes place. Then Section 26 gives the schedule of weight categories and amount of tax for purpose of calculating the new tax. Then on page 38, line 18, it provides that it sort of it grandfathers in a sense, aircraft that have already been paying tax. And they can continue to pay the tax that they paid in this current registration period if it is less than the tax that would be computed under the weight-based system. Section 27 requires Minnesota residents or Minnesota entities who own turbine-powered aircraft to file an affidavit with the commissioner that states, that identifies the aircraft and includes maximum takeoff weight in that affidavit. Section 28 requires aircraft manufacturers who sell aircraft in Minnesota to file with the commissioner an affidavit that explains, that gives the takeoff weight for each model that they offer for sale in Minnesota. And that has to be, the list has to be updated when they come up with new models. There is a current requirement that manufacturers have to file the list, the retail list price of each model, and that's stricken so that now they just have to file the maximum takeoff weight. And the final provision is Section 32, the last section of the bill, and that is a repealer. That repeals three subdivisions in the aircraft registration tax section, and those are definitions and provisions that relate to the value-based system of registration taxation for aircraft.
Mr. Bears, or Ms. Berezovsky, can you just confirm for us, when we're talking about the tax provisions here, we're not talking about general fund revenue sources. This is an entirely separate fund. Could you just talk about that for a moment?
Madam Chair, that's correct. This is the state airport fund, and it is not general fund.
Thank you. And Senator Gimsey, the reasons for doing this would include that we're lowering that registration tax, which is anti-competitive.
That's exactly right, Madam Chair. And I can give you an example, you know, real quickly. If you buy a new plane at $20 million in the state of Minnesota, under the current law, you would pay 1%, which would be about $200,000 every year, where states around us, like Iowa, would have a $5,000 registration fee on that. And it really is an issue of competitiveness, and, you know, for some of our major employers, such as SuperValu, 3M, and others that do have these corporate airplanes, it gets to be a lot of money for them. And now we have an agreement where we can actually make that up, and the fund will be whole using the fuel tax.
So is there a net impact then? There's no net impact to your fund, Senator Gimsey?
Madam Chair, the goal is to have no net impact. It won't be an actual increase in anybody's taxes in the scheme of things, if you will. Yeah, it's supposed to be zero impact. So, and there are those, Chris Roy is here with MnDOT Aviation. We can speak to that portion of it. And we have other testifiers if you'd like to hear from others.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Chris Roy. I'm the Director of Aeronautics for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And Senator Gimsey is unaware. About 1:05 this afternoon, I received an email from the Department of Revenue, which changes that previous statement about it being fiscally sound. So we are working with Revenue, trying to get some further clarification. And what it comes down to is there's two components of this bill. There's the aircraft registration, which would reduce the cost of the aircraft registration. Our office has computed that cost and what that would do. Department of Revenue is trying to get us a number on what the increase in the fuel tax would do and how would that offset. Based on some calculations that I had, everything came out very close. It was within $200,000 on a $19 million fund, so things were pretty close. It was a little short. It was at $200,000 short. But based on what Department of Revenue just sent a few minutes ago, it would result in a $1.5 million deficit to the airport fund. Revenues collected in 2010 under the current system versus projected revenues that would be collected under the proposed system would be $1.5 million less. And I apologize for not being able to talk to you about that sooner. But
Senator Kimsey?
Well, that's eye-opening news at the last moment. I'll assure you of that. When we put this provision in the bill, it was our understanding that while it wasn't exact, that it was going to be very close. And the partners and the people that were working on this assured me that they can make up the difference in an adjustment to the registration fee and make – it wasn't quite that amount, though, and so
Senator Kimsey, if you'd like, we can lay the bill on the table so that you can look at the fiscal note and then make a comment as opposed to having to comment on something you haven't seen yet or the revenue estimate. So, Senator Kimsey, would that be
–
Madam
be,
Chair.
Senator Rust.
Could I just
that.
Make a comment about this?
Sure. Senator Rust.
Well, I just want to we heard this bill yesterday, and I don't support the total bill, as you know, but certainly the tremendous work that's been done to try and make Minnesota more welcoming to the general aviation traffic and having Minnesota's planes registered in Minnesota. And I just want to commend you, Senator Kimsey, for bringing this forward. And this is indeed the right approach, in my opinion, and we've been studying this for 3 years in the former Transportation Committee, where I chaired a subcommittee on aeronautics and railways and waterways, and even with the working group did not come to a resolution that could be accepted by all the parties. And I hope that there can be a resolution to get that disparity closer. I don't think it has to be zero, Senator Kimsey, Madam Chair, to be an appropriate policy. But excuse me, what did you say the number was?
Based on the most recent information, Senator, it would be about a $1.5 million gap. It seems very high, and we should work further with Department of Revenue.
And, Madam Chair, that sounds too much to me like a back-of-the-envelope estimate, and I would, you know, think if you could get it down to even $500,000, that's still a reasonable way to proceed. I don't know. We want to lay the bill over for a while to see if there is a more neutralizing number to put in there. But this is one part of the transportation bill that I think needs our endorsement.
Senator Rust, I agree with you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Kimsey. I agree. I'm pleased with your work here. I agree that this is an important issue that you need to resolve. I would like to ask the gentleman from the department, you know, would you want to check with revenue? Is the reason that this large dollar change because of reduced gallon usage because of the economy, or what's driving that? Because if that's the case, then it is a temporary change, and, you know, maybe the agreement would just need some very modest changes to make it work.
Mr. Roy.
Chair and Senator, quite frankly, I don't understand where that number is coming from, and I haven't had the opportunity to have those conversations with the Department of Revenue. Based on historical information and what we had for even actual fuel consumption in fiscal year 2010, I was estimating that shortfall be only $261,000. There's some wildly different numbers here, and I don't have answers as to why they're different. But we can certainly look into that, and hopefully in a matter of just a few minutes, and be able to give you a report back.
Senator Gimsey, I would like to take your recommendation. We can lay this bill over so you can look at it, or else we also know that this bill is going on to finance, and they can look at it more closely. Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd be interested to know if there's total agreement on these changes. Senator Rest is right. This has been around a long time, and I haven't heard that there's any opposition. I guess I'd be interested in knowing if everybody's in agreement.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Bach, all the major parties were present at the transportation hearing, including the airlines. There was a representative, I believe he's here now. Was it Mr. Inus? Who was it? Yes, from Delta Airlines, saying they were very agreeable to the proposal, and we had testimony from members of the aviation community, like Super Value and General Mills, supporting these increases and willing to take the impact of the increase on the fuel tax as a welcome trade-off with a registration tax. But $1.5 million is concerning, Madam Chair. Now, is there somebody here from revenue who made that estimate? I wonder if they can tell us why the difference.
Like I said, I think this is new information for most of the folks sitting in front of us right now. So we might want to just lay this bill on the table for a few minutes and let them have time to look at the estimate. So, Senator Bach.
Before lay on the table, I might have some additional work if they don't currently have the information. But I noticed in Article 2, Section 7, 11, 12, there are filing fee increases in here. I noticed in Section 7, we extend a surcharge for $1.75 per vehicle registration renewal. In Section 11, we increase filing fees, registration renewals by $1.50, and then Section 12 from $4.50 to $6. Section 12, $1.75 technology surcharge is extended. That's set to expire. I'm just wondering what the total new fee impact of the bill is. There's obviously some pretty significant new revenue being raised in this bill, and I'm not indicating some of it may be going to the general fund, some's probably going to deputy registrars. I'm just wondering what the total fee impact of the bill is, if Senator Gimsey has that, or if not, maybe we can get that before we move it out of here.
Senator Gimsey.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, just to briefly discuss those fees, the $1.75 technology fee is something that is currently being charged, and it's used to support the new Minlar system. And I see Pat McCormick is here, and she can come up and talk about the dollars that are generated from that surcharge. But what we found was that as we got going and building out this new computer system and technology system for our driver's licenses and titles, that the estimates came in very low compared to what is actually needed. So the department asked to extend those the cutoff date for those, the sunset date, and I originally agreed to do that till 2013, and then later found out that if we just go out to 2013, that they couldn't get good rates on their contracts unless they were assured that all of the money was going to be there. So then we finally did agree to go to 2015 and extend them out to that point. And you're correct in that the $1.50 fee that's added to the transactions for motor vehicle titles and transfers is going to the deputy registrars. That's also something that we have worked on for a number of years to try to get an increase for those deputy registrars. And it's I know my predecessor, Senator Murphy, was supportive and tried to accomplish that too. And those deputy registrars are out in all of our communities and struggling quite a bit. in order just to keep the doors open. And some of them are private franchise. I'm sure you know all about this, Senator Bach. Some of them are private franchises that will close up. And I think this is the reason I support this is because it's an accessibility issue for the citizens, certainly of greater Minnesota, to those agents that can make those title transfers. And so that's why I supported it, and I understand that and appreciate your concern that it is a fee increase.
Well,
so.
Madam Chair, Senator Gimsey, what if I renew my if I do these transactions down the hall here at MnDOT, where does that's not a deputy registrar? Where does that money go?
Senator Gimsey.
Senator Bach, I would like to bring up Pat McCormick to have her talk to this, but that fee goes into a special revenue account within the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Because, Madam Chair, sometimes I, depending on if I have time to get to my deputy registrar, sometimes I mail it in to the state, and I'm just wondering, a deputy registrar doesn't benefit from this fee increase that way. Someone else benefits. So I'm just wondering where that fee goes, and I really do want to know in total what the total fee increases in this bill are.
Thank you. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat McCormick, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, which is a part of the Department of Public Safety. And as you said, we have 175 deputy registrar offices that handle motor vehicle transactions on behalf of the state and work with DVS, as well as 125 driver license agents who also work with the state. And so this expands the accessibility for all of our all Minnesotans in order to get their registration renewals completed and their title transactions completed in terms of the deputy registrars. DVS does not have face-to-face contact with customers for motor vehicle transactions. As you mentioned, we do offer mail registration for tab renewal, and we have an online tab renewal system. But in general, most Minnesotans go to the deputy registrar. Over 73% of all motor vehicle tab renewal transactions take place at the deputy registrar offices. DVS's website, the online tab renewal, does about 6% of all tab renewals, and the mail registration does about 22%. The filing fee is kept at the location that does the transaction. So the $850 transaction related to most vehicle transactions in this bill would increase to $10. And the deputy registrars keep that filing fee in order to pay for their operations. In the case of tab renewals, if the DVS does it through the mail registration, then DVS keeps that filing fee. And the online renewal, DVS keeps that filing fee. But those filing fees for DVS pay for our operations in order to do that. We contract with the Department of Health and Human Services, who does the mail registration processing for us, and then we take care of the transactions. So it's basically just to pay for operations at whatever facility you do your business with.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I raise it because I hear a lot of rhetoric around here, how we're only going to spend what we take in, we're going to live within our means, and now I find buried in the transportation bill are, I don't know how many million dollars of new fees, but lots of them. And I did hear yesterday that the ag bill has got some newer increased fees in it. And I'm fine with that. I just think that the people that are taking the microphones around here and talking about living within our means and we're not going to spend any more money than we take in, Senator Michelle, need to get a little bit honest about what we're doing here. We're raising fees. In this bill, in the ag bill, I imagine probably in others, let's just be honest with Minnesotans about it. That's all. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough money at the $34.2 billion we're taking in, so we're having to raise some fee revenue to make sure that the operations that Minnesotans expect us to provide are available. That's all.
Ms. McCormick, are any of these proposed fee adjustments anywhere beyond the actual cost of providing the services to the residents that will pay for the fees?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, as you know, in 2005, DVS proposed, and it was adopted into law, that we would operate with special revenue funds. And so we take in, we on a biennial basis, we review our costs and our operations, and we look at whether or not we would need to propose raising our fees that we would take in. And we have not raised our fees except, as Senator Gimsey said, for this technology surcharge so that we can build a new information system and replace the system that we've had for over 30 years. But we also only live within the money that is appropriated by the legislature and operate only on what the appropriations from the legislature are to operate our budget.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. So nothing to get too excited about here, folks. We're just imposing fees and adjustments to make sure that folks are paying for the services that they're providing. Are they provided? Senator Gimsey and then Senator Rest and Senator Hoffman, are you?
No.
Okay. Senator Gimsey.
Madam Chair, and to Senator Bach's question, Ms. Boyd does have the actual numbers of what those fees take in, if he is still interested in hearing that.
Well, and Senator Bach?
I'm interested. Absolutely.
All right. Ms. Boyd, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Bach, if you look on page 6 of the spreadsheet, there is a small section on revenue items. That has not been updated to the extension of the sunset that we just passed last night, but it is in the governor's recs, and I can tell you that it's broken down as the extension of the sunset on the technology surcharge fee will bring in an additional $13.4 million a year to Division of Vehicle Driver Vehicle Services. The $1.50 increase on the filing fee will bring in an additional $1.965 million annually to Driver and Vehicle Services. And what's not shown on the spreadsheet is that filing fee also brings in about $7.5 million annually to deputy registrars, because that's not a state revenue. So the total annually in increased fee revenue would be about $22.9 or $23 million.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we're here, it has been called to my attention that we do need to amend this bill. We have a date that, since we did extend out that the time period for the $1.75 on page 33, line 11. We inadvertently missed one of the dates there to change that to 2015, and Ms. Berzovsky is bringing around the amendment that would change that date from 2013 to 2015, and then it would fit the rest of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
I would move that amendment, but I also would like to just clarify what Ms. Boyd said, that the spreadsheet we have with regard to line 257 does not reflect the action taken by the Transportation Committee. And so Senator Gimsey, the details for the Senate and for the out biennium would mirror those of the governors. Do I understand that correctly?
Senator Rust, that is correct.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd
so
move I'd
Senator
move,
Rust. The A-22 amendment. Questions or comments about the A-22 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A-22 is adopted, Senator Gimsey. Now, Senator Gimsey, would you like a few minutes to go and look through that fiscal note and then come back to the committee? If so, I would move to lay your bill on the table at this time.
Appreciate it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. The chair would like to lay over Senate File 898. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The bill is on the table, Senator Gimsey, for when you're ready to come back. Other amendments to our bill, which is Senate File 27. on any article at this point. Senator Rust.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would move the A14 amendment, and it is to Article 5, Tax Increment Financing. This is an amendment that reflects the bill that was heard in the Tax Committee that was a replay of the changes that we had made actually in the 2010 tax bill that then just did not, we adopted them, but they didn't get into the final bill. And what it does is to allow the housing replacement TIF districts to expend increments to develop housing with certain conditions, and allows the essentially pooling for that purpose, and sets forward. And we made the, when we had the bill in the committee, we had Senator Marty noted that some of the conditions were not consistent, and Ms. Off has redrafted that for purposes here so that those expenditure the conditions are consistent, and I would appreciate consideration of the committee. And I believe Ms. Nauman is here from Metro Cities, who could speak to it if members have any further questions. I believe that the bill was thoroughly reviewed at that time. And once again, just like the provisions that are in the bill that extend some TIF provisions for 1 year, which I think was reasonable, rather than the 2 years as requested in the jobs bill, that this is also a proposal that responds to city's ability to act in within the tax increment financing statutes with regard to the housing crisis, which sometimes seems like it's on its way to being solved, and sometimes it looks like it's taking an about turn. So I would hope that during these times of instability that we could go forward with allowing the cities to do that. And it does have a sunset through the end of 2016, so it will allow them 2 years, I guess, 3 years to work on these housing programs.
Senator Rust, I know that this was intended to be passed in the last legislative session and that it was left out. And on that basis, folks might like to approve this. Substantively, it's not a provision that I have supported in the past because I'm concerned about the local governments being in the housing business. And I just... No. But there may be folks that agree that if it's been done in the past, it should be continued because it was an oversight in previous law. So
appreciate that.
With that, the A14 has been moved by Senator Rust. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Members, at this point, we would like to take a 15-minute break, come back a couple minutes after 2 o'clock. Hopefully, we'll hear from the transportation folks, finish up on that bill, and then we will take up the remaining articles and any amendments that members still might have. And it looks like there could be many. With that, we are in recess until 2:05.
Hello.
Hi.
They just called me.